The strangest thing about AI right now is that it's making the computer on your desk important again. For the last 15 years, the story of personal computing was basically the story of the computer disappearing. Your files moved into someone else's cloud, your apps became browser tabs, your storage became a sink of some sort, your OS became a launcher for other people's infrastructure. And for a lot of software, that seemed fine. It was convenient. It was maybe the right trade at the time. But agents are changing the direction of travel for compute. Because a useful agent doesn't just answer a question, it wants to touch the work, it wants to read the file and inspect the folder and run the test and edit the spreadsheet and search your notes and open the browser and remember the decision you made and try again when the first attempt fails. So the more useful the agent becomes, the more it starts reaching back toward the oldest primitives of computing, files and processes and permissions and memory and local state and execution. That's why the personal AI computer matters. Now, quick caveat up front, because I talk a lot about frontier models on this channel, and I'm going to keep doing that. The best cloud models are incredibly useful. And one of the most important trends is that they're moving closer to our personal computers, not farther away. So Codex, Claude Code, and the whole class of coding agents matter precisely because a cloud model can now interact with your repo, your terminal, your files, and your tools on the machine right in front of you. So the argument here is not cloud is bad, local is good. The argument is that as AI reaches deeper into the personal computer, the ownership question for you gets sharper. If models are going to touch your files and remember your work and call your tools and sit inside your workflows, there is still room, maybe more room, for a stack that is all yours. And that stack matters because some of the most valuable AI work is not the most difficult work in the abstract. It's not the work that takes a cloud model at the very edge of the frontier. It's the work that is closest to your own context, your notes, your meetings, your drafts, your unfinished projects, your weird folder system. And the question for you becomes, which parts of that should you keep renting and which parts should you own? And how do you start to intentionally think about that as models keep getting better and that workflow divide starts to change? Because even a few months ago, open source models could not do a lot of what I just described at all. And now they still aren't as good as the closed source frontier models, and you still can't give them as much messy work as, say, ChatGPT 5.5 by any stretch, but they're getting a lot better. And it's worth thinking about, at least for some of your workflows, especially if you value privacy or have highly confidential information on your computer. So by the end of this video, I want you to have a mental model for the whole personal AI stack, not just which GPU should I buy, not just which model is best this week, but the actual stack, the machine, the runtime, the models, the memory, the apps, and the workflows that make local AI worth owning in the first place. Because the biggest mistake you can make is buying a really fancy computer whose only job is to run benchmark prompts or to do your emails, which is what so many people do with their Mac Minis and OpenClaw. The best version of a personal computer is a lot more compelling than that. It's building a durable place where AI can attach to the rest of your computing life and you still have privacy. There's a historical echo here that I think is easy to miss. Before the personal computer, the dominant model was actually time sharing. You rented compute on someone else's mainframe. You waited in queues, you worked inside rules set by an operator you would never meet. The first personal computers did not beat that mainframe on raw power. They won because they collapsed the distance between the person and the machine. AI is creating a similar opening. Frontier models are still better at the hardest tasks, and they're going to stay better for a while, but most personal work is not a moonshot benchmark. Most personal work is messy, and it's repeated. It's not too huge. It's private, and it's context heavy. It's like, what did we decide here in the meeting? Please find this draft. Look in this repo and explain why the test is failing, or can you make a follow-up memo, or help me do a journaling program? All of that work benefits from the model being in your files, your tools, your memory, and the places where you're already doing personal computing. When all of that gets separated out into the cloud, it gets harder for the AI to touch all of the files and folders you want that you need taken care of on a single computing space. And frankly, that's why a lot of enterprise workflows involve a lot of harnesses that tie a cloud model into a local memory file system attached to Azure or attached to AWS. They're essentially doing the grown-up enterprise version of exactly what I'm describing here for a company. It's the same principles. You want to get the model close to the work it needs to do. And if you want to go local, the open weight ecosystem is moving fast enough now that this is no longer a theoretical conversation. Meta's practical open weight line is no longer just about the old Llama 3 story. Llama 4 Scout and Llama 4 Maverick have moved that Llama lineage into mixture of experts models, where the important question is no longer how big is the model, but how much of the model fires for each token. OpenAI has GPT OSS 20 billion and GPT OSS 120 billion, which are open weight reasoning models under Apache 2.0. They're not ChatGPT. They're not models you call through the normal OpenAI API. They're weights you run on infrastructure you control. Qwen has become one of the most important local model families for agents, for coding, for multilingual work, and for tool use. Google's Gemma 4 pushed serious capability down into smaller local models under a more permissive license. It's designed for OpenClaw. Mistral's newer open models fill in both large frontier-style deployments and efficient local ones. Now, on April 24, DeepSeek previewed V4 with Pro and Flash variants, which is a good reminder that any model list you make today, it starts aging right away, right? That's the point. The model list is not the durable thing. The durable thing is the stack. If you build this right, you're not buying a single model appliance. You're building a local substrate that you can evolve over time. New models can drop in. New runtimes can replace old ones. New memory stores can be added. New agents can call the same tools. New interfaces can show up without taking your knowledge base with them. The personal AI computer should not be a sealed box that does just one trick. It should be a place where the rest of AI can connect to the rest of computing. So start with the least glamorous part, the hardware. This is where people get trapped because they want one universal answer. Mac or NVIDIA, the CUDA Tower or the DGX Spark, buy now or wait. There isn't only one answer because local AI is constrained by memory capacity, bandwidth, accelerator support, software maturity, cooling, power, noise, and that annoying one, what you do every day. So the better question is not what is the best AI computer, period. The better question is what local workload are you trying to own? If you're learning the stack, if you're running private document search and doing local writing and local coding assistance and maybe transcribing audio, the boring answer is that a recent Mac with enough unified memory is enough. A Mac Mini with M4 Pro and 64 gigs is a great entry point. A Mac Studio becomes interesting when you want 128 gigs or 256 or even more, 512 gigs of unified memory. The Mac advantage is not raw tensor throughput here. The advantage is unified memory and low noise and power efficiency and the fact that the machine feels like a computer instead of a project. And this is the CUDA path. An RTX 5090 gives you 32 gigs of GDDR7, say that five times fast, an excellent throughput. Two of them gives you 64 gigs across cards, but that's not one clean 64 gig pool of memory, right? The payoff is speed and ecosystem support. And so you're dealing with a cost of drivers, of heat, of power, sharding, maybe maintenance. So you have to think that through, right? And then there's the NVIDIA DGX Spark, which is the appliance version of the NVIDIA path. You get a Grace Blackwell chip on the desk. You get 128 gigs of coherent unified memory. You get NVIDIA's software stack and a product story around local inference and fine tuning instead of just a parts list. That doesn't mean it beats every custom rig. It means it packages the NVIDIA stack in a way that may be worth paying for if you want a CUDA native local AI without building the tower yourself. AMD's Strix Halo systems are kind of the value wildcard here, right? The hardware story is attractive. The software story is still less mature than CUDA and less frictionless than Apple's Silicon. Which brings us back to the real buying rule. Don't buy for the biggest model you read about. Buy the thing you're going to run daily. If the work is private writing or notes or documents or meetings, you want to buy memory and simplicity. If the work is coding agents and throughput, buy CUDA and just accept the maintenance. If the work is long context personal memory, buy storage, buy unified memory, buy a real database, right? If you're just experimenting, start with what you own. The box needs a job before it arrives, so do that work. Once the machine exists, the next question is whether the software makes it feel like a tool or just a tax on your time. And this is where runtime really matters. The software that loads the weights, that serves the inference, that handles quantization, that exposes APIs, that manages batching, and that decides whether your expensive hardware is actually being used well. Most people underestimate this layer because it isn't as exciting as the model name. But runtime is the difference between local AI feeling like a normal part of your computer and local AI feeling like a weekend that you just have never had a chance to recover from. The foundation underneath a lot of this is a tool called llama.cpp. Even if you never call it directly, you benefit from it all the time if you run your own stack. It helped make GGUF, the common local model format. It runs across your CPU, across Apple Metal, across CUDA, across Vulkan, and more. And for most people, the runtime on top of that should still be Ollama. It's not always the fastest or the most configurable, but it gives you a clean command line interface, a local server, a simple model registry, and an OpenAI compatible surface that other tools can talk to. That makes local inference feel normal, especially if you're used to cloud models. And just a quick note on all of the technical terms I'm using. I know that I'm using a bunch of very specific terms in this video. Don't be scared by them. If you want to build your own local stack, you really can start with a Mac Mini, and I'm going to give you a complete teardown across multiple degrees of complexity at the end of this video to help you understand which approach you want to take depending on the workloads you're going after. So don't let the technical terminology scare you. And in fact, you can load the transcript from this video into your AI of choice and have it explain to you what each of the technical terms I'm mentioning mean. So let's keep moving. If you want to go with a more sophisticated runtime, LMStudio is a polished workbench for testing models and quantization. If you want to go with something Apple native, MLX matters on Apple Silicon because it's a more native performance path. And if you're serving real workloads on NVIDIA hardware, vLLM is where the conversation starts to really up-level, right? It handles batching, OpenAI compatible serving, and enough throughput for a team or an internal product. Beyond that, you can tackle SGLang or Tensor, RTLLM, or even NVIDIA NIM. Those are all for serious deployment tiers. That's where you get into latency, structured generation, agents, and serving economics that enable you to justify the complexity of your build because of how much you're getting done. But the practical default is simple. Ollama for daily use, LMStudio for evaluation, maybe MLX if you're tackling the Mac side of things, vLLM when serving becomes infrastructure, and that deeper NVIDIA stack when you've committed to CUDA. Notice what happened here. We haven't picked the model yet. That's intentional. If the runtime layer is healthy, models become very swappable. If the runtime layer is brittle, every new model becomes a migration effort. It's a lot of pain. Now, the model layer is where the yelling and the discourse gets loudest and also where it ages out the fastest. So I would not build a personal AI computer around a single model name. I would build around model classes for particular workloads. So for example, you probably want a fast local model for cheap calls, a stronger local generalist model, a coding model if that's what you're into, an embedding model for memory, a speech model, maybe a vision model, and of course, a frontier cloud fallback for the work that still deserves it if that's what you're willing to do. So the personal AI computer that I'm describing here is not necessarily anti-cloud, it's just anti-dependence. You don't want to be dependent on the cloud models. And for general work, the local landscape now has real choices. Llama 4 Scout and Maverick are important because they show where the open ecosystem is headed. They have a mixture of experts models, it's a multimodal approach, longer context, more deployment nuance there. GPT OSS matters because OpenAI put permissively licensed reasoning models out into the self-hosted world. Qwen matters because it's become a default family for lots of agents, for coding, for multilingual work, and for tool use. Gemma matters because Google is pushing very capable local models down to smaller sizes designed specifically for OpenClaw type applications. Mistral matters because it keeps offering serious open-weight alternatives with a strong enterprise and deployment story. But the most important takeaway here is this. There is no one right model that wins at all the use cases. Part of what you're doing when you set up a strong personal computer for AI is you're asking yourself, what is the mixture of models I need? And that's what I'm looking to give you, is the sense of choices and the rationale you'd use to make those choices. For example, for coding, you don't want one model doing everything. You want a small autocomplete model, a repo-aware editor model, and a deeper reasoning model for architectural changes, for debugging, for migrations. If you're doing docs, you probably want to think about an embedding model and how you handle embeddings so that you can retrieve semantic memory correctly. Qwen embedding models are good here. There's other options as well. Whatever fits your stack. Embeddings are very cheap to run. They're easy to cache, and they're central to privacy if you value a private set of core documents that don't go to the cloud. You know, if your documents end up leaving your machine just to become vectors, you've missed one of the easiest wins in local AI. If we're talking about speech, Whisper is still a reference point. Local transcription is fast and private, and if you own the hardware, it's very economical. For vision, local models are finally good enough for document screenshots, for chart extraction, not for all visual reasoning, but for a lot of personal media search and work, and that belongs in your stack now. Ultimately, your model portfolio should feel less like picking your favorite chatbot and a lot more like building your tool cabinet. A small model for fast loops, bigger models for hard local work, specialized models like I've been describing for various aspects of code editing, code production, media, and then a cloud model for the frontier cases. The principle should be you own the runtime and you only rent the cloud model in exceptional cases. Now, if you're wondering, do I have to do all of this? This feels like a lot of work. Nate, can I just use a cloud model? The answer is absolutely you can. And for many people, that's going to be the answer. But I know a lot of folks in my audience who value the privacy that comes with their own local stack. And I want you to have the tools to be able to build that stack in a way that aligns with your workflows. Because a lot of the videos that I see are really useful for building your own personal computer, but they're not useful for helping you decide what stack you should be on, which is arguably the more important thing to do. Figure out the workflows you need to go after and then build the stack that fits. And that's really my focus here. And I'm giving you essentially lots of choices that you can dig into. And if you want a full punch list, yes, it's absolutely going to be on the Substack. Getting back to our stack, the layer that actually turns this from a toy into infrastructure is memory. And that's the part that I think people tend to underbuild. The model is stateless, but your life isn't stateless. Your life, you remember things. You go through life with durable memory. Every useful personal AI system also needs durable memory outside the model. It needs notes and documents and transcripts and email and tasks and calendar events and code decisions and research and preferences and a sense of long-running project state. And so your most important architectural decision is that this memory should belong to you, not the model provider. And that's why I built OpenBrain. OpenBrain is an open source GitHub available memory system that allows you to build a SQL-driven database approach to memory with an easy MCP server attached, but that also recently we've added an embedding management system for. So you can do almost an Andre Carpathy-like hybrid memory system where you have the Carpathy approach to memory involving lots of different interlinked and interweaved embeddings that help you make sense of multiple documents at once, and also a SQL approach that lets you store and categorize facts in a neat way. And so that's something to think about. You obviously don't need to use OpenBrain to solve for this, but I built it because I think that memory is very high leverage and it's important to manage your own memory in the age of AI so you're not beholden to a particular cloud provider. After all, in the cloud-first model, the AI service really wants to own your memory and you visit your memory, whereas in the personal compute model that I'm describing here, you own the memory and the models come to you if you choose to rent them. And that inversion is the heart of the whole thing. The source material for your life, your memory, should live somewhere durable. If you don't want to go with OpenBrain, you know what? You can go with Obsidian. It's a default if you have a lot of docs. It won't work as well for lots of quantitative storage and facts. But if most of your work is in docs, it will store it in Markdown and folders you can control, and you can absolutely use Obsidian. I know a lot of people who do. Plain Markdown plus Git is like the boring immortal version. For structured work, you might go with Postgres, which might be better than your notes. That's why I built OpenBrain that way. But the key property for memory overall is very simple. Your knowledge keeps existing even if the AI app disappears. Then you need retrieval. For many serious systems, Postgres with PG Vector is the grown-up default because it lets you keep relational data and metadata and permissions and vector search all in one place. SQLite with SQLite Vec is the lightweight personal version. It's just a single file. It's easy to back up. It's easy to understand. Now, the part almost everybody gets wrong is on the pipeline side. Good retrieval is not throw every document into chunks and hope. By the way, if you're wondering, wow, this sounds complicated, OpenBrain does take care of a lot of the chunking strategy, a lot of the retrieval strategy, a lot of the input and classification strategy for you. And so that's an option for you if you'd like it. But the point here is that different kinds of data need different memory handling, and you have to think about that in advance. Like PDFs need different handling than Markdown. Meeting transcripts need speakers, they need timestamps, code needs symbol-aware indexing, notes need links preserved. You need to know what changed, what was indexed, and what should be regenerated when a better embedding model comes along, which is why it's so important to have your raw data and your embeddings and your database separately, because then you can always rebuild it if something goes wrong. Most of the time when something goes wrong with a memory system, it's not the model itself, it's the pipeline that's the issue. And you have to think about how the pipeline affected your chunking strategy, for example, or how it affected your ability to handle retrieval, etc. And then there's the access layer where MCP becomes interesting. OpenBrain has MCP. An MCP server in front of your database can let Claude or ChatGPT or any custom tool you want query that memory. That is the right direction. But don't assume just because you have an MCP in front of something, you can treat it like magic. MCP servers are just executable tool surfaces. They still need permissions and logging and secrets management and boundaries to work well. Your personal AI computer should not just be a pile of local tools that any model can call for anything. It should be an owned system that you set up intentionally. That's the difference between useful local intelligence and just giving the model the keys to the vehicle and hoping it all goes well. The next failure mode is interface. A great runtime with no comfortable surface is just a setup that you're going to stop using after a week because you're not in it. And that's why local AI can't just live in the terminal. The model has to live where your work lives. You can use something like Open Web UI for chat. Anything LLM is worth considering when you really, really want to focus on retrieval heavily. LM Studio is good for direct model work. You just want to pick the tools for the interface that feel like they align with your current workflow. That's the principle. For editors, Continue is one of the obvious bridges because it can point at OpenAI compatible endpoints. IDER remains very good for terminal-based code editing, and there's a whole class of coding agents that are converging on a very similar pattern that you'll want to work with, right? Model plus tools plus repo plus context in a planning loop. And that's really how it works, whether you're using a cloud model or a local model, if you're into coding. Now, for launchers and command surfaces, the things that get the models going, the boring tools matter more than you might think. Stuff like Raycast and Alfred and shortcuts and shell commands, small menu bar apps, an LLM command line interface. A personal AI computer basically shouldn't require you to open a chat bot just to talk to the LLM. You should be able to call it from your editor, from your notes, from your browser, from your finder. You get it, right? Anywhere you're in the computer, you should just be able to speak or to type, and you should be able to get the LLM. Voice is underrated here because hosted voice assistants trained everyone to expect disappointment over the last few years. But local voice can be different now. Whisper handles transcription, a local or hybrid model handles intent and cleanup and summarization and routing. And the interface principle then is not just install a bunch of AI apps, it's just speak what you're looking for, and it sticks what you're asking into a single stack underneath. The principle is many surfaces, one stack underneath. So your editor, your node app, your browser, your launcher, your terminal, and your voice recorder, those don't have separate memory layers, right? They should call in to the same local runtime and the same memory layer, and they'll actually work well. This is the part that a lot of products aren't going to give you because their business model depends on owning the memory underneath the input channel. And so you accumulate that memory inside a particular cloud model for meeting transcripts, right? And then you can't get it out again. The last layer that you should think about is where you want to put your workflows. And this is where you stop asking, can I run the model locally? And you start asking, what is the workflow I now control beyond the model itself? If you're thinking about managing workflows, personal RAG or a personal memory system, like I described earlier with OpenBrain, that is still a clean first win. You can index your notes and your drafts and your PDFs. You can create a database. The value there is not generic search. It's that you actually develop a long-term institutional memory of your work over time. A frontier model might have read the public internet. It's not read the past few years of your meeting notes, and it shouldn't need to. Private coding is another obvious loop, right? A local coding assistant with repo access can do a lot more than autocomplete these days, right? It can do refactoring, it can do test generation, it can do drafting. It may not be up to what frontier models can do on the code side, but it can do a lot. And you can keep frontier models for the hardest tasks. Again, I keep emphasizing, this is not about a hard rule. It's just about choosing where you want to fight your battles. And local models now are good enough for a lot of the agentic loop to work by default on many of the simpler software problems out there. Meeting capture is another one. You have local Whisper plus a local summarizer. It means you can record and transcribe and summarize and extract decisions and create tasks and store that result in your memory layer. No audio ever leaves the machine, no per hour transcription bill. You can run that on every call for a year, and you're going to start to see things over time, right? Your decisions become searchable. Your commitment that you make becomes something you can retrieve and look at. Your recurring conversations become part of effectively a private institutional memory that you own. Long-running agents also start to make more economic sense when inference is local, because cloud APIs, they're expensive, right? You might psychologically not want to run as many tokens because you don't want to pay for it. But if you're just limited by the cost of electricity, you're going to be more inclined to set up really long-running agentic loops. tools, which is exactly what we see with the OpenClaw phenomenon, where people set up local computers and they just have their agents always on. Research and synthesis are probably going to stay at least partially hybrid for a long time, because local models can retrieve and organize and summarize and prep context, but frontier models are needed for hard synthesis type problem types, hard research, in the same way that they're needed for very difficult coding problems. So at this point, I think the buying decision becomes a lot clearer if you're going back to the stack you need. Imagine three people. One is a local first knowledge worker. They write, they research, they code a little bit, they handle sensitive documents, and maybe you want private AI without turning the home office into a complicated server room. That person should probably start with a Mac Mini M4 Pro with 64 gigs, or maybe a Mac Studio M4 Max with 128 gigs if the budget allows. They'll use Ollama, LM Studio, maybe MLX, probably local embeddings or a local memory system of some sort, Whisper, Open Web UI, Continue, and a very simple retrieval stack that maybe has some SQLite and Obsidian mixed in, or something that has the markdown and something that has the database on the open brain side. It's not too complicated. I know that sounds like a lot of names, but you really can load this into an LLM and it will literally give you a punch list of what you need to get in and in what order you need to set it up. And I have a whole write-up on Substack too. And that person can still keep one Frontier subscription or API account for the hard work. It gives you a sane default if that's you, right? You get privacy, you get speed, you get ownership, you get enough capability for daily use without pretending the cloud is irrelevant. Another person, maybe you're all local maximalist, right? You're not hearing this desire for cloud. You're like, no, I've got to have privacy. So you want privacy, you want compliance, you want sovereignty, you want to run your core work without a dependency. At that point, you're looking at a high memory Mac Studio or a DGX Spark or a similar serious workstation. You have to have something that gives you full control, right? You might even look at a mini NVIDIA stack. The memory layer would be something like Postgres with PG Vector. Tools would probably sit behind MCP with permissions and audit logs. And I got to be honest, this is not the cheapest build, right? But it's the cleanest expression of the local thesis, right? Local modes, local memory, local tools, local workflows. And then you can just go to town, right? Last but not least, there's the local first builder. A developer or a small team building software, running agents, testing products, or just trying to reduce cloud inference spend. That person probably cares more about CUDA throughput, about serving, about evals, and about repeatability. So they might get dual RTX 5090s, workstation GPUs, DGX Spark, or maybe a mixed local cloud GPU setup. vLLM for serving, Ollama for prototyping, and TensorRT LLM or NIM when deployment efficiency matters. The principles are simple here. Local models absorb development, they take care of private data, they provide opportunity to handle batch jobs and high volume inner loops, and those economics start to add up because you're handling it locally. Local inference does not have to replace every single hosted call to add value. It only needs to absorb enough of the repetitive, private, high volume work that you feel like you get your money's back on that purchase. And that's the key distinction. Ultimately, the personal AI computer is not a purity test. It's just a routing system. Some work stays local because it's private and it's cheap and it's repetitive or context heavy. Some work is going to go to the cloud because it's rare and it's hard and it's high value, or maybe it needs the frontier. The power comes from you deciding instead of just defaulting to what the cloud providers want. The long-term reason to build this stack is not cost savings, although the cost savings can be real. The deeper reason is compounding your knowledge over time, and that's why I talked about memory so much. Every project, note, meeting, decision, correction, preference, and workflow can become part of a memory system you own. Over time, the personal AI computer becomes less like a chatbot and more like an operating layer over your work. The model might change out every few months. The memory can get better every year, and that's why extensibility matters a lot. But fundamentally, the source data that you're storing on this system, the markdown notes, the PDFs, the transcript, the code repositories, the media files, they stay. They're a source of truth. And you can just continue to expand and improve your data set that you build off of that over time, whether you're building with embeddings or whether you're building a SQL database. However you decide to solve that problem, and I've got other videos on that, you can absolutely build a memory system that evolves over time and that gets better over time, that preserves your institutional memory, that preserves the workflows that you have. And the mission is simple here, right? Your goal would, if you care about this, is to not let a proprietary AI app capture you and become the only place your knowledge exists. I talk a lot about the idea that there are multiple good models out there. Well, we need an underlying compute layer that enables us to take advantage of that. So build open interfaces, right? Open AI compatible local endpoints, let mini apps talk to your models. You're not locked into local only. You can talk to cloud if you want. Model context protocol lets multiple clients talk to your tools and your memory. Postgres or SQLite keep retrieval from becoming trapped inside one product. It's a lot of the basis for OpenBrain. Plain files in Git keep the whole thing very inspectable. Treat your tools as you use them on the system like permissions instead of just conveniences. That's an important principle as you're thinking about the design. The more useful an agent becomes, the more you have to think about this, because agents with access to shell permissions, access to payments, agents with access to serious parts of your computing stack are agents that need serious permissions to operate responsibly. So you need to think ahead and ask yourself, if I'm operating multiple agents on this machine, what is a responsible access pattern here? A writing agent does not need shell access. A coding agent doesn't need my bank statements. A meeting summarizer doesn't need permission to delete files. Think about how you control the attack surface of your agents if you're going to do this, right? Otherwise, you'll have extensibility without boundaries and you'll just be in trouble. You want to be in a position where you are managing the scope your agents have so that they are not irresponsibly permitted to do anything on the machine. Now, I've been emphasizing memory as the heart of this system, and I want to give you a few tips there. Memory needs to be cumulative, but also auditable. The system should be able to learn from your work, and you should also be able to inspect what it stored, delete what's wrong, trace where a fact came from, and rebuild indexes when better embeddings arrive. Assume in general that you're going to persist a hybrid experience where you call the cloud and call these larger models sometimes. They'll continue to get better. In most cases, you're going to want that unless you are a very hardcore local compute only person, in which case I've got a stack for you and I already talked about it. But for most of us, the point of a personal AI computer is not to reject every cloud model forever. The point is actually to positively own the substrate that cloud models or any other model can plug into at will. Because a frontier model can still be called for rare and hard and high value work whenever you want. But this kind of setup allows cloud AI to be a visitor to the system, not dominant across the system as a whole. And by the way, if you're like, no, I just want to use cloud models, Nate, that's fantastic. I talk about cloud models all the time. There's lots of future videos and past videos that are all about setting up cloud models and cloud agents on your system. And I'll keep making those because so many people need that fluency as well. Now, once you have your personal stack, the rest of the computing world starts to look a little different. You're through the mirror. You ask yourself, why does this app need to upload my draft to its server? Why does this agent want a token for my entire account? Why does this assistant lose its memory the moment I close the tab? Or why am I paying per interaction for a model that can handle this routine job on the box already sitting on my desk? And those questions, they tend to only be visible once you actually go through that looking glass, you build a personal stack, and you have an alternative. That's what makes the questions that I described just now feel tangible and real. And this is where I think people get the local AI argument a little bit wrong. I hear a lot about beating the cloud. It's not about beating the cloud. The cloud frontier is going to keep mattering. It may matter more, not less, as the hardest models become more expensive to train and serve. But that actually strengthens the case for owning the rest of the stack. It lets you use the frontier model as the specialist. You don't make it your memory, your file system, your workflow engine, your operating layer. You hire it for the job it's best at, and you stop renting it the rest of your life. Your personal AI computer is then not really a nostalgia play. It's not a hobbyist retreat from the internet. It's a bet that intelligence becomes more useful when it's closer to work. When it's closer to the files, closer to the tools, closer to your memory, closer to the person, you, that's asking it to act. The machine on your desk has a job to do. That's the whole point of this video. It doesn't have to be the smartest computer in the world. It can just be your computer. It can just be your AI. And that's why I made this video. I want you to feel empowered to make an intelligent choice and say, actually, I do want that world of the prosumer. I do want an all local world. I want a local first developer model and developer machine stack. If that's you, you can head on over to the Substack. I've got a full punch list and build recommendations. I've also got a nice reminder and guide to OpenBrain so you can dig into the memory side, because there are lots of people that are just using OpenBrain for the memory piece and they're not going after the full hardware stack. And that's another way to put your toes in the water on owning part of your compute stack. Whatever your choice is, I just want you to feel comfortable and feel like you own your destiny. And like the AI agents and the LLMs out there that are cloud provided, don't get to run the long-term parameters of intelligence in your life. It's up to you, and it should be up to you. I'll see you next time.